There was a bit of a debate down at the Dog and Pullet the other night. Arnold said that Mata Hari, the famous spy, was a man, that he dressed up as a woman to fool the enemy. And when the enemy found out how they'd been taken in, they were too embarrassed to let on. This Mata Hari worked his way into the German high command and worked out a code by flashing his false eyelashes. And a British officer who was posing as a German sausage salesman watched them with a pair of binoculars to see how many submarines were on the move. Well, I didn't believe a word of it. I'm not even sure whether they had false eyelashes in those days. And I didn't think much of Charlie Bates' story either. He hates to be left out of things, does Charlie. He claimed he was dropped behind the enemy lines and told to find the underground. As he said, it was just fields and trees and there just wasn't an underground there. Charlie'll say anything to look big. When he got caught, he told the Germans that if they'd let him go back, he'd spy for them as well. He said that double agents do all right. They get paid by both sides. Double agents, Charlie said, can hardly lose, and if they send both sides a load of rubbish, there's no real harm done. Nowadays, most spies are double agents. That way they avoid income tax in their own country. At least that's what Charlie says. It set me thinking about how people get to be spies. It's not the sort of thing you see advertised in the vacancies column or even the personal column. And you can see all sorts of things in there. I've never seen any call for spies down at the job centre. But what sort of qualifications do you need to be a spy? My wife, Rita, she's pretty good at spying. She knows what's happening for miles around and she hardly goes out of the house. She's just got the instinct for it. She's what you might call a natural-born spy. She's been doing this spiritualism for years, you know, and she's got so that she can see what's going to happen before it happens. Last year, she had the idea that the house was going to blow up, and we had to go over and stay with her sister Gladys until it blew over. It's all a waste of time. The house didn't blow up at all. It was the house next door. Just lately, Rita's had the idea that we're being spied on by unseen people from outer space. She said that there was a gas board van and a van from the water board talking to each other outside the house. That's ridiculous, I said. But she said that there were these funny voices jabbering away and there was nobody in the vans as the workmen had gone for their dinner. It's the wireless, I said. You don't understand. Nowadays, everybody has to be in touch with each other all the time. But what for, she said. So they know where they are, I said. The people at the headquarters of the gas board want to know where their men are working. But she said, oh, she does go on. If there's nobody in the van, they're not in touch, are they? Yes, I said, but they don't know that, do they? But why don't they switch off the wireless when they go to dinner? Because they don't want them to know they've gone to dinner, do they? They don't want everybody knowing their business. It's wireless business. It's really caught on. I mean, it's all over the place now. There's these CB people talking to each other as they're going along. Going along where, she said. Well, I said, going along anywhere. But what do they talk about, she said. No. She never lets up once she's got the bone between her teeth. They talk about anything, I said, just to see if they're all right. It's quicker than sending a postcard. Well, she said, I wouldn't go telling everybody things on the wireless. It's all right, I said, they don't give their proper names. That's how spies work, she said. Spies, I said, you've got spies on the break. They put bugs under your pillow, she said. And then they can tell when you wake up. Bugs, I said. What have bugs got to do with spying? They call them that, she said. They're little tiny microphones and they pick up every sound you make. Well, I said, a lot of good that'll do them, listening to somebody snoring. Some people, Rita said, talk in the sleep. I don't know where she gets it from. Well, what about you? I said, you're always trying to get in touch with people. That's different, she said. They're all dead. I didn't think any more about spies. Well, I mean, you don't much, do you? Not until this chap knocked on the door when I was checking my pools. I opened the door and he sort of burst in and brushed past me and got down under the stairs. "Close the door," he said, "unless you want blood on the ceiling." "Blood," I said. "What the... blood? But why?" I suppose you couldn't give some sort of explanation. "Don't worry," he said. "You'll be compensated for any damage." "Damage," I said. "What damage?" "I haven't got time to argue," he said. "They're on to me," he said. "I'm not surprised," I said. "I can't explain now," he said. "It's a matter of national importance. Draw the curtains." I said, "It's not properly dark yet." Then he got this gun from his pocket and started waving it, and he didn't seem all that steady. "Draw the curtains," he said, making it sound urgent. "Look," I said, "sit down a bit. I'll put the kettle on for you. You've got yourself all worked up. I'll ring the Samaritans." "You do what you are told," he said, "or it'll be the worse for you." I didn't see how it could get much worse. So I drew the curtains and he calmed down a bit. "Good," he said. "I just wanted them to know where I am, drawing the curtains. It's a signal." "It's funny, you know," I said, "but I had the idea you were hiding from someone, not telling them where you were." "Not them, you fool," he said. "Good God, man, not them." "Not them," I said. "Oh, you don't mean them, you mean the others." "What others?" he said. "Never mind," I said. "You're not one of them, are you?" "I hope not," I said. "Is there anybody outside?" he said. "Well, how do I know if there's anybody outside?" I said. "You made me draw the curtains." "Switch the lights out," he said, "and take a look." "Well," I said, "that's a bit of double dutch, if you like. Put the place in darkness and then start looking." He said, "Do as you are told." "All right," I said. "Keep your hair on. I shan't be able to put the kettle on, shall I?" So I switched the lights off and, of course, I couldn't see a thing. "Go on," he said. "Get over to the window." "All right," I said. "Anything for a quiet life." So I found the wall and sort of felt my way over to the window. "Is there anybody out there?" "No," I said. "Are you sure?" he said. "Take a good look." "I am looking," I said, "but I've still got my reading glasses on." "Well, get your other glasses," he said. "That's all very well," I said, "but I can't find them in the dark." He suddenly went all limp and slumped into the armchair. "I'm sorry about this," he said. "National security. Whatever happens, don't tell anybody anything. Summon up all your strength of will. If they use torture, well, it could be painful, but tell them nothing. Otherwise, you could be charged under the Official Secrets Act." "Well, that's all right then," I said. "I'm glad you haven't told me anything." "Good man," he said. "I knew I could rely on you." He jumped up and started walking round the room, looking at things. "Is there a back entrance?" "Well, yes," I said, "there's a back door." "Well, lock it," he said, "and put the bolts on the front door. Are there catches on these windows?" "Are you expecting someone?" I said. "If you'd have said, I'd have tidied up a bit." "If anything happens," he said, "there's two capsules in my top pocket, one for me and one for you. You won't feel anything, just a sudden numbness all over." "Why?" I said. "Have you tried it?" "That'll spoil their little game," he said. "Sounds as though it'll spoil mine as well," I said. "Now, look here," I said, "be reasonable. I'm not the sort of chap to let the old country down, but I've got my own priorities. Rita will be back from her healthy cooking class soon, and there's a frozen pie that I'm supposed to put in the oven." "Can't you raise yourself above trifles?" he said. "If they get in here, the lights will go out all over Europe." "Well," I said, "they've gone out in here already. It may be a trifle to you, but if Rita gets home and there's no dinner on, my life will not be worth living." You've been brainwashed, he said, along with the rest of them. Well, I said, I never noticed. No, he said, you wouldn't. Just then I heard the key turn in the door. Oh, Lord, I said, there's Rita. Now the fat'll be in the fire. As soon as she discovered that the bolts were on, she started banging on the door. Leave it, he said, they'll go away. But she won't go away, I said, she lives here. In fact, she hasn't got anywhere to go now. She's fallen out with her sister. Then Rita started shouting through the letterbox, are you in there? Have you fused the lights again with that lawn mower? Just shows you how her mind has stopped working. It was the wrong time of the year for the lawn mower anyway. It was an accident. How was I to know that a garden gnome had sunk down in the grass? All that fuss about burying its little charred body. By now, Rita was getting mad and giving the door a good thumping. Look, I said, I'll have to tell her something. She won't give up, you know. All right, he said. Tell her to walk round the block and see if she can see a woman in a black coat. But how will she know that? I said, it's dark now. All coats look black in the dark. Do as I say, he said, getting all excited again. The women of this world must be kept out of it. Well, I said, that's all right in general, but Rita's different. You can't keep her out of anything. Oh, all right, I said, but it's on your own head. So when she stopped for breath, I called out to her. Rita, I said, you can't come in. Why not? She said. I've got somebody with me, I said, and we don't want to be disturbed. Walk around the block and see if you can see a woman in a black coat. What for? She said. There, I said. I knew this wasn't going to work. I'm washing my hands of it. There could be a dozen women out there in a black coat. They all have one for funerals and that sort of thing. Rita said, I'm going to have one of my hysterias and I'm going to fetch a policeman. We don't need a policeman, I said. There's nothing to worry about. I'll tell you all about it later. There's a woman out here, Rita shouted, and she's looking for her husband. Has she got a black coat? I said. I don't see what that's got to do with it, she said, getting all umpty. Then another woman, a complete stranger to me, started broadcasting to all and sundry through the letterbox. Charles, she said, can't we talk this over? She wants to talk it over, I said. Tell her, he said, that she shouldn't have interfered with my private files. You shouldn't have interfered with his files, I said. But I didn't know they were private, she said. They weren't in the filing cabinet. They were in the shoebox. They were in the shoebox, I said. Yes, he said. You expect things to be private in a shoebox. Tell her that. What am I supposed to be here, I said. A relay station. Then Rita started up again. It's cold out here. I forgot my gloves. Well, I said, I'll get your gloves if that's all you're worried about, you and your spies. It's all your fault. He's not a spy, said Rita. He just thinks he is. His wife said that he thinks he's a secret agent. I don't know what he is, I said, but he's got a gun. It's not a real one, Rita said. He's been doing it in a play and he still thinks he's in it. It's me that's in it, I said. So I undid the bolts and this woman rushed in and flung her arms round this chap and he started to cry and it all got very messy. Rita came in and flung me against the wall. Look, I said, it's none of my doing. You haven't peeled the potatoes yet, she said. I've had things on my mind, I said. I've got 6 drawers up and I'm still waiting to see whether I've got the other 2. If I have, there'll be some changes around here. I'll tell you that. There's a rumour going round that they're going to